I wasn't going to sing a solo. I want to invite you to turn to Luke chapter 18. We're going to be there in just a minute. But before we go there, I want to acknowledge some special, special friends who we have here today. Pastor Georgie and his wife Susie. Pastor Gustavo and his wife Susan Santos. Pastors, incredible, incredible pastors in Mississippi on the Gulf Coast, and we got to partner with them last fall on our mission trip there. Some of you know them and have gotten to share time with them, and you know how great they are. If you haven't had a chance to meet them, make sure you get to meet them today. That's one of the great things about having District Assembly in our backyard right over there is that all of our brothers and sisters get to come this direction. So we are blessed to have you here today, you and your families. Thank you for joining us. All right, well, Jesus was traveling to Jerusalem, and he was in and out of villages along the border of Samaria and Galilee. He was in places where he came across all different sorts of people from all different walks of life, the rich and the poor, the religious and the irreligious, the Jew and the Gentile, the powerful and the outcasts. And as he came in contact with all of these different people, he was teaching them and telling them about the kingdom of God. And as he was doing so, Jesus was teaching them in parables. It's important for us to be reminded of what a parable is. Many people think that a parable is a simple story with a clear-cut truth. People believe that parables are neatly packaged tales that make good moral points. People think that parables are accessible and understandable and that they go down easy. But that's not really what parables are. A parable is more like a bomb. It's surprising and unexpected and jarring when it's set off. On the surface of a parable, there is a simple story, but there's something beneath the surface of a parable. There's more. Parables are surprising, and they are offensive, and they're scandalous. They're intended to rattle you, to take hold of you, to jar you, to shock you into a different way of thinking and seeing and believing. One writer says that parables have trapdoors. Once you think you understand a parable, it's like the bottom falls out. You lose your legs. Suddenly, you find yourself at a deeper level of understanding and you're disoriented. That's how parables work. So when Jesus is going around telling parables, it's important for you to know that Jesus was intending to rattle people. Jesus was intending to surprise people, to shock them, and to offend them with his parables. If we miss the surprise of a parable, if we miss the scandal of a parable, then we've missed the parable. Maybe the best thing that can happen for all of us when we encounter a parable like the one we're going to encounter today, maybe the best thing that can happen is for us to walk away and say, I'm a little bit surprised and I'm a little bit offended and I'm a little bit disoriented. And maybe for you to say, that parable's working on me. Because if that happens, then the parable's doing its job. It's doing the work that Jesus intends it to do. So in this story, Jesus is traveling. He's coming in contact with all of these different sorts of people from all different walks of life. And some of them were Pharisees. Now, we need to do a little bit of rethinking about Pharisees. So many of us already have in our minds what Pharisees were, and we already have this notion, this caricature of a Pharisee. It's important for us to remember that Pharisees were religious leaders. They were experts in the law. They were knowledgeable. They were upright. They were clean. They were really good religious people. Jesus was going toe-to-toe with them throughout the Gospels. He had a number of rounds with them, but the Pharisees really were upright, moral, religious, good people. This parable we have today begins with, to some who were confident of their own righteousness and looked down upon, despised, rejected everyone else, Jesus told this parable. Jesus is doing something here that preachers ought not do. but he's Jesus, so he can do it. What Jesus is doing here is he's aiming. He's aiming his words. He's aiming this parable. Now, as a preacher, I never say, Mike Turner needs to hear this. So I'm going to preach it to everybody, but really what I'm doing, I'm aiming it right there, and I hope he gets it. And as a preacher, I never do that. I'd like to sometimes, to be honest with you. And sometimes maybe some of you think that I'm doing that. I hear people after a service say, that was straight for me, or you were talking to me. But the truth is, even though it feels like sometimes I aim my sermons, I don't do that. I don't aim my sermons. I never aim my sermons at a person or at a group of people. I pray and I study and I ask the Lord to help me know what to say because I don't know what to say. But I don't aim because that's the Holy Spirit's job to aim. Amen? But Jesus, he's aiming. And it's okay for him to aim because he's Jesus. He can do that. And Jesus has the Pharisees in his crosshairs. It's like Jesus is pulling the pin with his teeth and he's ready to lob the grenade right into their circle. He's aiming. To some who are confident of their own righteousness and they look down upon, they despise, they rejected everyone else, Jesus told them this parable. Would you stand with me as we hear the word together? Pick up in verse 10. Jesus says, two men went up to the temple to pray. One a Pharisee and the other a tax collector. The Pharisee stood by himself and prayed, God, I thank you that I'm not like other people, robbers, evildoers, adulterers, or even this tax collector. I fast twice a week and I give a tenth of all I get. But the tax collector, he stood at a distance. He wouldn't even look up to heaven, but he beat his breast and he said, God, have mercy on me, a sinner. Jesus says, I tell you that this man, rather than the other, went home justified before God. For all those who exalt themselves will be humbled, and all those who humble themselves will be exalted. Church, this is the word of the Lord.
Thanks be to God.
Amen. You may be seated. So when Jesus begins his story, when Jesus begins this parable, he says, two men went up to the temple to pray. One of them was a Pharisee and the other of them was a tax collector. Right from the very beginning, when Jesus begins the story, everybody who was listening to Jesus tell this story, they knew from the very beginning how this story was supposed to end. In their minds, as they're hearing the beginning of the story, before Jesus even gets any further into the parable, they know how this story is supposed to end. They know that you have a good guy and that you have a bad guy. They know that you have a guy with a white hat and a guy with a black hat. And they know that the good guy is supposed to win in the story. The Pharisees in those days, despite everything that we've heard about Pharisees and all the ideas we have about Pharisees. In those days, the Pharisees really were the good guys. They were the upstanding, moral, religious, upright people of their day. So the Pharisee was the good guy, and Jesus could not have chosen a badder bad guy for his story than a tax collector. Couldn't have chosen a badder bad guy. Rome occupied Jewish territories, and Rome would hire a Jewish individual to be a tax collector to tax their own people, to oppress them and send the money back to Rome. And Rome let these tax collectors take as much money as they wanted from their very own people. So the Jewish people looked upon tax collectors as greedy, slimy traitors. They were seen as turncoats, as extortionists. One preacher says that in those days, someone would not have uttered the words tax collector without spitting. There wasn't a badder bad guy than a tax collector that Jesus could have chosen for his story. So everybody who's listening to Jesus tell this story, they know how this story's supposed to end. When Jesus begins the story, they're ahead of him. They already know how this story is supposed to end. They knew who the good guy was. They knew who the bad guy was. They knew who they were rooting for. They were rooting for the good guy. They knew who should win. They knew who should lose. Both of them, Jesus says, went up to pray. The Pharisee stood straight. He stood straight by himself, and that was by choice. He stood at an arm's length from anyone else. He kept his distance to maintain his purity. And he prayed, God, I thank you that I'm not like other people, robbers and evildoers and adulterers, or even this. And he noticed him over there in the corner of the room, even this tax collector. The Pharisee says, I fast twice a week and I give a tenth of all I get. And the people who were listening to Jesus, they looked at each other and said, that's impressive. They were impressed with this guy, with this Pharisee. They said, those are all very good qualities. Those are all very good deeds. This is admirable, very religious, very upright, very moral. When Jesus is telling this part of the story about the Pharisee and the Pharisee's prayer, the people listening to Jesus, they were nodding their heads saying, yes, that's right. That's impressive. That's good. That's what we all should aim for. In those days, the Pharisees were required by law to fast once a week. But this Pharisee says he does so twice a week. He is exceeding the expectations of the law. And furthermore, he says, I give one-tenth of all I get. The law also required a Pharisee to tithe, to give one-tenth of his income. But there was this nitpicky debate that they had going on, and they went back and forth over time about, well, should we give a tenth of our gross income or should we give a tenth of our net income? And people would go back and forth and they would have their debates on should you tithe on the gross or should you tithe on the net? And the way he words this, he leaves no room for doubt. He says, I give one tenth of all I get. So he says, I'm tithing on the gross. And so he leaves no room for doubt. Once again, he is exceeding the expectations of the law. This Pharisee, he's a very religious man. He is not a bad guy. This is someone who's doing all of the right things. And in this prayer, he packages his religious resume. He is a good guy who does good deeds, and he is aware of the fact that he is a good guy who does good deeds. Meanwhile, the tax collector stood at a distance. He too stood by himself, but not by choice. He stood by himself because no one would dare stand near him. And I picture him crumbling to the floor. He's unable to lift his head. He beat his breast, which is a sign of grief. It's a sign of sorrow. It's a sign of remorse. He didn't know how to pray. He didn't have the right words. He wasn't nearly as polished as the Pharisee was. He opened his mouth and he whimpered and he stammered and he wept. And all that would come out was, God have mercy on me, a sinner. Over and over and over. God have mercy on me, a sinner. God have mercy on me, a sinner. So two men went up to the temple to pray. And one of the things that you should understand about this parable is that both of their prayers were honest. Both of their prayers were honest. Both of these men's prayers, they were saying exactly who they were and what they were before God. And so both of them were honest in their prayers. One man's prayer was, I am. I am religious. I am obedient. I am upright. I am. That was his prayer, and he was being honest. He really was, all of those things. But the other man's prayer was, I am not. I am not religious. I am not obedient. I am not upright. So both of them were being completely honest in their prayers. And everybody listening to Jesus, as Jesus was telling this story, everybody listening to Jesus, they knew exactly where Jesus was going with this story. Their heads were nodding in agreement. Everybody listening to Jesus, they knew that the moral of the story was going to be like the Pharisee. They were all ahead of Jesus. They knew exactly where Jesus was going. There was not one person present who was listening to Jesus who believed that the point of the story was going to be anything other than be like the Pharisee. And when Jesus got to the point of the story where the tax collector's beating his breast and praying, God, have mercy on me, a sinner, the people listening to Jesus tell that part of the story, they said, dang straight, he is a sinner. And he's going to have to do a lot more than go to church and say a prayer. They didn't have any sympathy for the tax collector. They're listening to Jesus talk about the tax collector. They didn't have any sympathy for him. And so then Jesus comes to the end of the story, but really, really, what's the point of Jesus even telling the end of the story? Jesus doesn't need to tell the end of the story, right? Because everybody who's listening to Jesus, they already knew. They knew in their bones what the end of this story was supposed to be. But Jesus comes to the end of the story, and he says, I tell you that this man, the tax collector, rather than the other, the Pharisee, went home justified, made right with God. And the people listening to Jesus said, what? They put their hands over their mouths. Did he just say that? Why would he say that? He got it mixed up. That's what he did. You know, I do that all the time. You know, he meant to say, what he really meant to say was that the Pharisee went home right with God and the tax collector, he just got their names mixed up. That happens. But Jesus continued, those who exalt themselves will be humbled, and those who humble themselves will be exalted. And then what Jesus does, this is great. You keep reading after this, because what Jesus does, after he says that, those who exalt themselves be humbled, those who humble themselves be exalted. Jesus turned around and started playing with some babies. That's what he did. He turns around, starts playing with some babies, and he just kind of left that parable to work on them. Because that's what parables do. They just kind of sit on you, and they work on you, and keep working on you. And that's what's happening in the story. Now, before you think you understand, before you settle into thinking, okay, I've got it. I've got this parable. I figured it out. It's like a puzzle. I understand. I want you to know that this parable is more than, it's not like a movie with a surprise twist at the end. Okay, that's not what this is. It's not like a movie where we find out, oh, the good guy was really a bad guy all along, and the bad guy was really a good guy all along. And we find out at the end, surprise, that was the case the whole time, and we just didn't know it. We find out it's a twist at the end of the story that one of the guys takes off his black hat, and there's a white hat underneath, and the other guy takes off his white hat, and there's a black hat underneath, and that's not what's happening in this story. Because folks, listen to this. At the end of this story, the Pharisee is still the good guy. And the tax collector is still the bad guy. And the bad guy was the one who was made right with God. The bad guy was the one who was justified. The bad guy was the one who received grace. And there's the scandal. The bad guy gets justified and the good guy does not. The good guy, he's racked up a slew of spiritual points over the course of his life. But the bad guy, he has a deficit of spiritual points. And yet, it's the bad guy who receives grace. In this parable, nobody gets what they deserve. The good guy's done more to deserve it. But it's the bad guy who receives grace in spite of the fact that he's a bad guy. Are you feeling a little bit rattled? Because if not, I can start over. You're saying, no, I got it. This parable is for those of us who always want people to get what they deserve. It's a sickness that we have, that we always want people to get what they deserve. For those of us who always want people to get what they deserve, grace is something that is shocking and jarring and scandalous and surprising, because grace means we don't get what we deserve. After Jesus lobbed this parable at him, I imagine Jesus walked away and said, "That's my kingdom. You don't have to like it, but this is my kingdom. This is how my kingdom works, and it's so different from the world. The world, you get what you deserve. You deserve what you get, but that's not the way my kingdom is. My kingdom is a kingdom of grace where people don't get what they deserve." Folks, this is the same Jesus who said, "I came for the sinners." This is the same Jesus who said, "I came to seek and save the lost." This is the same Jesus who said, "It's not the healthy who need a doctor, it's the sick, and I came for the sick." You know, I can personally identify with both of these characters. I think most of us can identify with both of them. Once upon a time, I was more like the tax collector. I was a sinner, I was broken, my life was messed up. But just to be completely honest with you, today, I don't think this is going to surprise anybody. I have more in common with the Pharisee. I'm the religious guy who does some good stuff. That's who I am. In all of the Gospels, it's the religious people. 95% of the time, it's the religious people who Jesus is at odds with. Folks, that should leave us shaking in our boots, because that's us. And we come to the end of the story. See, you got to be careful when you say you think you got a parable figured out, okay? You got to be real careful. When you come to the end of the story and you might say, "Okay, now I think I've got it figured out." Some of you might say, "I'm not like the Pharisee. I'm not like that. Because I'm not smug, and I'm not self-righteous. I'm not like that Pharisee. I'm not like that." That's when you need to watch out. Because it's at that very point that you're just like the Pharisee. Because what was the Pharisee doing? He's saying, "I'm not like those people." So the minute you say, "I'm not like the Pharisee," you have become just like the Pharisee. The truth is, every single one of us, doesn't matter how good you think you are or how bad you know you are, every single one of us is in deep need of God's grace. If there's any hope for us, if there's any hope for any of us, regardless of what color hat you wear or how good you think you are, any of that, if there's any hope for any of us, it comes in that first line of the story. Go back to that first line, because the real answer to this whole thing is in that first line of the story. To some who were confident of their own righteousness. Folks, hear this. If your confidence is in your righteousness, then you're in trouble. If your confidence is in your righteousness and how good you are, or how religious you are, or how upright you are, or how good you vote, or how all of those types of things, if your confidence is in your good deeds and all that stuff, if your confidence is in your own righteousness, then you are in deep, deep trouble. But if your confidence is in the righteous one, then we come to the place where we are ready to receive his grace, his surprising and scandalous and offensive grace. Because the truth is, every single one of us is in deep need of his grace. My question for you this morning is, is your confidence in your righteousness, or is your confidence in the righteous one? Today we're going to come to the table of the Lord and receive the Lord's Supper, and our boys and girls are going to come join us. Discovery Kids are making their way in now. Pastor Danny and Pastor Mary and their crew are going to bring them in. As they're coming in, I'm going to ask for those who've been asked to serve, if you would come and assist us and prepare everything. Don't begin serving yet, but if you get everything ready to be served, we'd appreciate that. Come on in, boys and girls. We'll give our Discovery Kids a chance. Parents, you might want to wave. Let them see you so they'll know where to come in. Keep coming, guys. Keep coming. Yeah. All right. Come on in. We'll need some parents and some grandparents to wave, get their attention, let them know where you are. There you go. Keep coming, guys. All right. Church, would you share in this reading with me? This is the table, not of the church, but of the Lord. It is made ready for those who love him and for those who want to love him more. So come, you who have much faith and you who have little, you who have been here often and you who have not been here long, you who have tried to follow and you who have failed. Come, because it is the Lord who invites you. It is his will that those who want him should meet him here.